All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Midnight Ride. Joining me tonight on the pod is Mr. Bob Madeo from SoccerSoapbox.com. Bob, it's been a while. Glad to have you back on the show.
Glad to be here, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And I know you've been down doing some freelance scouting for the Revolution in Colombia. Your adopted home.
Yeah, adopted second country. Yeah,
adopted second country. Right.
I forgot to do anything of use for them, but unless I have some cousins who can play or something like that. Yes, I did get a break down there.
That's great.
I didn't find any hidden forwards.
No, you did. You find Pepe Moreno by any chance?
Was he hiding? After belief, I didn't scare him off either. Not intentionally.
Well, you know that there haven't. The big news that last week was that Pepe Moreno wasn't coming to the New England Revolution, and the big news this week is who cares? The Revs are apparently. The word on the street is the Revs are pursuing legal action against Moreno and club. Is it Once Caldas?
The Caldas, yeah. And I mean, the weird thing with Moreno is he played in a Caldas match, it appears, and got injured in the beginning of the second half. So,
right.
Probably not a good situation, no matter what the papers were signed. So you got to feel for the Revs on this one. Unclear that he would have been a game changer one way or the other, but it would have been interesting. But we'll just have to see how they play it.
Right. But it's all kind of moot at this point now because it's more than likely he's not coming in. The Revs have seemed to have moved on, announcing at the early stage of this week that not only were they bringing in former DC United target forward type, Blake Bretschneider, they've also went out and signed one of their trialists from earlier in the season, a guy named Sayer Sen from, the reserve team from Bayern Munich. One of their reserve program, if you will. They actually have their reserve team playing in lower division Bundesliga, I think fourth division Bundesliga or something. It's an interesting setup. But anyway, he had actually seen some preseason time with the senior squad where he scored a goal against AC Milan. And there's some great video footage of him out there. Actually, it's on the web, the Revolution's blog. They have a little video clip of his work in that game, which is, I was, you know, mildly impressed. It was, you know, he was on for what, 10 minutes or so, and seemed to get himself involved. And it's apparently the type of player that can get in behind defenses using his speed to his advantage and really stretch out the defenses.
Yeah, it's interesting. He looks like a good player. Looks, you know, from what we've seen, he's young. He's got a future ahead of him. The question, you know, one of the things that came to my mind is just he came on a free transfer, which means the contract was up, I suppose, and he didn't want to stay in the Bundesliga. And I'm just, it's a curious scenario, but it seems like a good guy to grab. So I'm glad we did.
Yeah, I was a little leery of it myself. I mean, if this guy's so great, how come he's coming over? But, you know, he's a bit younger than Pepe Moreno was, I should say.
And, you're dead to us now.
Yeah, okay. He's dead to us now, Moreno. But I'm just glad that they kind of didn't wait any longer to, you know, put this offer out there. And then they went out and they also, you know, they haven't closed the door on anybody yet.
Well, it sounds like you're making the presumption that they grabbed him because Moreno fell through, and my guess was they might have had two forwards in mind, a quick one and a bigger guy, Moreno, to play off of, and they lost one of the two.
Right, and that's kind of what the word on the street is that Sen might have been, you know, they said they were definitely going to get, Heaps went on record saying they definitely were going to get one, they maybe will get two. And I wasn't sure which one was the first one and which one was the second one, but they obviously announced Moreno first, so I had assumed, probably incorrectly, that Moreno was the guy that they first wanted. And it could have been just that they were waiting for Sene's contract to option or whatever with the Bundesliga to expire so he could come over here on a free transfer. That's my guess. But I'm not sure. I couldn't presume to understand the inner workings of Mike Burns' office by any means. But I'm just thrilled that they've made it happen. And I'm also glad that they're not, closing the door on anybody yet. Here's a guy who was on with the team earlier in the preseason, and he had left. We kind of all writ I had written him off. If he was if they still wanted him, why isn't he still with the team?
Yeah, sure.
But
Yeah, who knows?
who knows? But they have, like I said, they've also brought in Blake Bretschneider, which I think is great. A bunch of guys still in camp, a bunch of trialists still in camp.
And it appears that Jaquan is going another direction.
That is unfortunate, yes. But we had rumors a couple of weeks ago. It started out about Borman maybe signing with the Revs, and that they were working on that deal. But he had gotten an offer to play in South Africa, which I had speculated, given that he was due to make about $42,000 a year with the Revs minimum.
Yeah.
That he might try his
Not
luck
hard to
somewhere
top that,
else.
in other
No,
words,
it's not hard to
is
top that at the Home Depot. But it's kind of amazing to think a guy who's been in the league for 4 years will only be making $42,000. It says something about his value to teams, A.
And the one good thing we can all say is it means we're not Rangers.
Right.
Which,
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Rangers fans, it's just rude, but there is an upside to paying guys $42,000, I suppose, which means we have a soccer team next year.
Right, and it's not going out of business either.
Exactly.
And I guess with Nate Jaquan's situation, he was a second round pick, so the Revs don't have to make him a bona fide offer at a guaranteed number, which just means that the Revs have his rights to play in MLS. And if he doesn't want to play for the number that the Revs want to sign him at, then they've got to make he's got to come up with some other deal, or he's going to retire. And I guess he's mulling over retirement. There may be a team out there that wants to pick him up, and they will be willing to trade the Revolution for the rights
Something,
or something along those lines. And the Revs might get some allocation money out of the deal, or I think they'd also get a draft pick out of the deal. I'm not sure how that works. It is a very complicated process.
they should send them to Vancouver after Ching leaves. They'll need a big body up front.
You're Montreal.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah,
Yep.
it's up north somewhere.
Somewhere up there, it's a team that's in Canada, and it will be snowing and cold.
Yeah, exactly. As we speak here in the summer of winters.
Exactly. It's like 55 degrees outside in Boston right now.
Yeah, might as well go to Klinsmann's calendar.
There you go. Might as well. Might as well. But moving on from the Chaqua Borman saga, they do have a number of draft picks still in camp. Obviously, the Revs picked up two Generation Adidas players, so those guys are already signed, done, and dusted. Kellen Rowe and Tyler Pollock, both in camp, both doing well, and especially Kellen Rowe, it seems to be, getting a good look underneath Jay Heaps and seeing a
Yeah, he
lot of
seems to
the
be the
early
real
time.
deal.
Yep. He seems to be very the legit guy. Starting out, they're playing him out on the left side as kind of a attacking midfielder, I guess. I'm not sure if he's left-footed or not, but we'll find out soon enough.
I think I heard that he was, but now, yeah, he got me wondering.
Yeah, I think he's just one of those kind of all-around guys that likes to run in and make trouble for defenses and.
And everything we hear, he seems to be Failhaber-like, which is not the worst thing to have said about you. But we just have to figure out how they're going to play together.
Which Failhaber is the question, I
Well,
think.
fair enough. Fair enough.
I mean, I love Benny when he gets his when his game is on and his head is in the game. He's just unbelievable.
There is a different side, though.
There were some times last year where I wondered if that was the case, but I'm looking forward to getting the season going. It's only about a month away now, less than that. March 10th, Revs kickoff in San Jose. It's a 7:30 game West Coast time, so it's 10:30 our time. Imagine it'll be shown on Comcast Sportsnet. I'm looking forward to it. I'm wondering, Who else is going to be with the team at that stage? Now, I don't think rosters are finalized for a while, but you can't have more than 30. Well, and the Revs always trade in those two spots for allocation money, so they'll have 28 on the overall roster. But looking at the numbers now, I mean, they've got some guys, the supplemental picks, Alec Purdy, Michael Roach, Rick Smith, plus Blake Wagner and Gabe Mercier, who I'm not too familiar with, but those two guys were also trialists. Blake Wagner's seen an MLS veteran of sorts. He played with Vancouver last year for a little bit, he got let go by them, hooked up with Real Salt Lake for a little bit, and then moved off. Now he could end up being the equivalent of Cezanovic for the Revolution. Having Cezanovic, who also I believe had a little stint with either Colorado or Real Salt Lake before signing with Sporting. I don't know. I think the Revs are doing the right thing right now, showing up, giving everybody a chance to prove themselves, whatever. The big question is, can they get away with, the forwards that they have right now? Do they need, that one extra piece, that super quality forward, or do they need to go out and get a big name designated player?
Well, that's it's a kind of a trick question, right? I think you're not going to be too successful unless you've got the piece parts around a name. And the question is, can you accomplish both of those things with one person, or are we getting a name and a forward because we need both? And where would you put that name? I mean, I think at this point, the best name that resonates is usually a forward because you want a goal scorer, you want to be able to have the shiny lights when something good happens. I think the challenge we don't know here is with a lot of the new players coming in, how high the overall bar has been raised around them. Because I think it's the ongoing question of do you need to pick up the overall level and role players that are good enough, or do you need that big name? And ideally, you need the role players good enough that when you plug a big name in, he's just not consistently frustrated. And I don't know if we know how high or if that bar has been significantly raised because, being a college team in preseason is great, but doesn't really tell you a whole lot.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the history of the big name forwards, big name players, whatever, big name designated players, it's taken them a while to adjust to the game here. This is not a plug and play league. It is a different style from Europe in a very big way. Look at David Beckham struggled for over a year to get the feel of that team out in LA. Carlos Costley, hasn't done much. Omar Bravo struggled at first. Thierry Henry has struggled a bit.
And you look at like even the forwards like Juan Pablo Angel, right? He did well, went moved to another team, never settled. People wrote him off. He moved to what, Chivas, and then he did well again. So it's definitely a patience element.
And so I think it's, and question from our buddy Steve Erickson on Twitter, who asked the question, is it more important to get a big name forward or role players to complete the roster? And I think if we could get a true target forward, a functional forward that can, hold up the ball and, real number nine that, supposedly Pepe Moreno was going to be, but a guy that will hold up the ball and, allow the play to develop around him and then, be that pivot man, that point man. I think that as a role player is more important to the team overall in the long run than having a guy that, maybe 34, 35 years old coming at the end of his career and having to have to wait for him to adjust to the style of play.
And the question we, to Steven's question, question is it to what end are we asking? Is it to get the most victories? Is it to help bring people and get excitement in the stadium? I mean, the challenge is one of those, right? Because you can win games without the big name. I think, geez, most teams that have been winning prove that, except for LA last year, who kind of finally got it done with our version of a dream team. But if you're saying, how do we get soccer talk back on a Revs hashtag, and how do we get people in the stadium? It's going to take a full season of a no-name bunch of players winning to get people interested. Whereas if you drop a player in that people know, and he's got the support, you might be able to win and get more attention. So I mean, it kind of depends on more important for what.
Right. I think, there are obviously two goals. The Revs initially, when they were talking, when the designated player rule first came into effect, they were looking for a second David Beckham. They weren't making any bones about it. They wanted somebody who could help on the field and equally put butts in the seats. I don't think that they're so focused on the butts and seats part anymore. I think they've kind
Not
of
when you don't make the
seen,
playoffs, right?
right. I think they've come to the conclusion that a winning team is more important, and that good players will want to come play for a winning team. That's just the way it works. You look at guys that out in LA, they got a good thing going on out there. Granted, it's LA, the weather's warm, it's a lifestyle thing, and you've got David Beckham out there selling the team. If Boston in the summertime over LA in the summertime, I'll take Boston. Sorry. Sorry, LA. It's less smog, nicer beaches. I don't know about that. But anyway, it's
The beach is maybe a stretch, but I'll go with you, whatever.
yeah, anyway. So, and looking at overall, I think to kind of to my last point on this is that without having that key piece up front, that link between the guy who can defend from the front, who can hold on the ball, somebody that the Revs have been looking for a while. Maybe they had him in Milton Caraglio, but we never really saw it. But I think that's the real missing piece here. And if they can, get so Benny can dish the ball up front, and then,
Sounds like Rokan as well.
exactly. And if they can get that guy up there involved in the game, and then have players run off of him, whether it be Sayer Seni, excuse me, Sen, or
And I keep forgetting that I think it's Sainate looking at the PDF the Revolution provide.
right.
He's a big kid, so
Yeah.
I mean his game didn't seem to be target by any stretch, but I mean 6'3", 185 at least, long as far as this team goes, that's a big kid.
Yep. And whether it's Seni, Brett Schneider, Purdy, Michael Roach, Rick Smith, Zach Schalosky, Ryan Kinney, I mean, I don't care. I mean, I think that any one of those guys will see you can't have Zach Schalosky up there doing it himself anymore. It just does. He's not that type of player. Unless he's learned how to, hold onto the ball substantially over the last off season. But I really don't think that's his game. He's the kind of guy who sneaks in around the back of defenses as well, and has a nice subtle touch and can find the back of the goal on occasion. I think that they really need that guy, whoever he is. And maybe it's Brett Schneider, maybe it's Alec Purdy, maybe it's Mike Roach, maybe it's Rick Smith. I don't know who it is, but they need that person. The word on the street from today's game, and we'll wrap up this segment with this piece, was from our friends at New England Soccer Today, was that it was clear that the Revs forwards are out-muscled, and that the team's need for, quote unquote, the team's need for a big target forward was very clear. So that being said, that's obviously, I think, the priority. And whether or not Brett Schneider can fill in that role on an
Well,
interim
he
basis,
started too.
he did. He played 70 minutes, and granted, he's been a bit rusty. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's no longer with DC, is that he's just not maybe 100% fit, ready to go. But he's had the same offseason everybody else has had, so.
And I didn't look too close, but if we played a 4-4-2, it looks like the two forwards were Cárdenas from Colombia and Brett Brettschneider. And
Right.
I think Cardenas is one of those, kind of like we talked about whenever the heck it was I was last on, which is kind of like lots of midfield slash forwards and not a lot of pure, I'm going to put the ball in the back of the net kind of guys.
Right. Well, the Reds did win that game today, which is great.
They did. It's good.
Yep, they score from Alec Purdy, who scored first. He's a supplemental draft pick. And Shari Joseph also scored.
Both
But
assists by Mr. Rowe, so he
both
does seem to
is,
be
there you
pinging the
go.
ball.
The DC United did, assuming not DC United, excuse me, Boston College. I saw BC and then it was
Sorry,
later
every time we
DC.
win, we want it to be DC United, right?
Right, it's always DC United. What are you talking
Why
about? Can we play them every week?
not?
Anyway, BC did get a goal, but it looked as it appeared from early stages on that the Reds were well in control, and you'd expect that out of a college team. We're not going to expect the Reds to fold down on a college team just because it's preseason. But you'd expect them to boss the game and boss the tempo, and you'd expect these guys to be the college team to be a little bit attentive. But yeah, it's I mean overall, it's a good way to see some of these guys play in a real competitive situation, a semi-competitive situation, I should say. Give them a good run out. Brett Schneider's been in camp for 3 days. This is the first time he's seen some kind of real game action, if you will, for lack of a better term. But we'll
And a
have
lot of
to.
this has to be, hey guys, we're going to have to cut back pretty soon. Who's going to make this cut?
Right. And that's what it's all about.
And the one thing that I'm just kind of noticing, and I haven't heard too much, but the folks that were unavailable are interesting as well because we had Soares, it says a knee, Niasse, a hamstring, Lozano, and adductor. And just, man, hope we're not heading down a path we've had down before.
Yeah, and then Zach Boggs in a boot. It was a little bit interesting to see who's playing and who isn't. But the team is heading out to Tucson on Saturday for a little preseason tournament, the FC Tucson Desert Cup or something like that. And I'd be interested. I can't wait to see who's going to make the trip. It'll be very telling, I think, if some of these guys are still on the roster by the end of this week, and some of them aren't. Maybe they're just bringing everybody. I doubt it. They'd have to really like what they see out of some of these guys to bring them along, and we'll have to see. So, on that note, I think we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about other stuff. There's a lot of other stuff going on. There's
What a
the
tease.
there's the Supporters Summit coming up. There's stuff going on with the Development Academy, and then there's the whole debacle about something. We'll make it up as we go along. Anyway,
Nice.
we'll be right back. Stick around.
This is Danny Beerseed, founder of the Free Beer Movement. Help us build American soccer one beer at a time by visiting www.thefreebeermovement.com. It's American soccer culture with a nice buzz.
This is Darius Barnes, and you're listening to The Midnight Ride.
And we're back on the Midnight Ride, joined once again by Mr. Bob Madeo, Soccer Soapbox. And Bob, we had maybe a little tease into this FC Tucson Desert Diamond Cup. We're going to get the name right, which starts next week, next Wednesday night, the first game for the Revs against none other than the Los Angeles Galaxy. And the team, on paper, these are tough teams. They were, you've got them facing Los Angeles Galaxy. You've got them facing New York Red Bulls, and Real Salt Lake. I mean, these were big teams last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Big names, big teams. Yeah. You know, New York struggled to pull it all together, but they had a lot of quality if they could have pulled it together.
Right, right. And early, in, I think you mentioned during the break that early stages of LA's preseason not going according to plan. You know, unless your plan is to lose every preseason game, then it's going exactly according to plan.
Sneaky, sneaky guys lowering expectations.
Right, right. Well, you know, they've granted a lot of their squad is kind of been disassembled and it's being reassembled, and you know, they've had a busy offseason as well. They had an overseas trip to Pacific Rim somewhere, and then
Beckham's been busy with Super Bowl. He's got a lot of commercials to make.
Yep. God, that was unfortunate.
Donovan's had this other little team to go play for.
Yeah, so. Donovan's over in Europe, over in England, playing for Everton. He's supposed to be coming back on Sunday. And then Omar Gonzalez went off and, you know, did his knee, which is a tragedy.
I felt for that kid. That was just terrible.
It really was too bad. But at the same, and done in by none other than American fullback Mr. Timmy Chandler. Rest of the team, well, Robbie Keane's over here is over in England as well, but he's supposed to be going back. So they're really getting a lot of their big players back, but they've still got, you know, Janino, who's coming back in. If they've got Donovan, they've got McGee, they've got Robbie Keane, you know, and somebody else, I think it was Brian Strauss from, who was saying this on another podcast, but that this is probably, you know, on paper, the best midfield in MLS.
And it's just funny too, we were talking before about do they need to like raise the level of the role players or get names, but you just mentioned Donovan, Beckham, and Keane, and it's like, well, they seem to have managed to do both, and that's how come they win.
Well, they've got three designated players.
Yeah,
and they're splashing the cash there, and they've got three guys that can still play, and they're not only are they big names though, but they are also all role players. And you know, Beckham is there for his service and his crosses, and Donovan is there to run a defense, and Keane is there to get behind and score goals, and that's what he does. And all three of them, you know, are earning their money, so to speak. It's a lot of money. It's more money than the New England Revolution have ever spent on a team. One player alone, I think, if you took Robbie Keane's salary or, you know, none of them have come close. I mean,
no.
You could pay for the Rev salary two times over with Landon Donovan's salary. So it's a tough situation when you think about it that way for the Revs to go up against these guys. But and they are masters at the salary cap as well. So they've got a bunch of allocation money and they're buying down people's contracts. And so they're able to get guys like Janino and, you know, form Birchall, but even though Birchall's no longer there with the team, he's gone. But you know what I mean. So they're able to work the salary cap to their advantage, and it's worked them out really well. You would hope that they would be able to share some of that knowledge on how to do that with the rest of the league. But the big thing going on there is that they're going to be going out on Friday for this Saturday for this preseason tournament, and by the end of that, we'll pretty much have a good idea as to who is going to be on the team. Now, right now they've got 24 guys technically under contract, but one of those guys is Pepe Mourinho, and we know that he's more than likely falling off this roster, and so they'll have 23 guys. It's more than enough for a squad and a practice squad, but the question then is, and we've already talked about adding another player or two, but the question is who's going to be that second assistant? That right?
Yeah, there's a lot of people visiting training camp, aren't there?
There were quite a few, and it's funny. We were talking about this in the break. This is an interesting scenario. Now, apparently, Jay Heaps, when they announced that they had signed as Jay's assistant, Mr. Jay Miller. I think it's Miller, right?
It is, yep.
And Jay Miller's been around for a while, especially in the younger groups and in working with the youth team in Bradenton and the U.S. soccer youth development programs, things of that
yep.
nature.
Yep.
Which is great. So you've got a guy who's been around the game for a long time, helping Jay out, and you know, especially a new coach and a rookie coach, somebody who's got a lot of coaching experience behind him will definitely be a valuable
asset on the sideline. Yeah, they still have that that one assistant and reserve coach position available. So I think we have to begin to start rumors for every person that stops by training camp. And
yeah,
that's what I'd live for. So
let's talk. There's a favorite of yours, Mr.
Leonel Alvarez, ex-Rev, briefly coach of the Colombian national team. He was assistant for them for a while, and then when the head coach down there was unfortunately treating people of the opposite sex not too nicely in public, he got fired. Leonel took over, did okay, and lost to Argentina, I think 2-1, which is not a really bad result. But he ends up getting the hook for Argentine Peckerman. So he's one would imagine he's out on the market. He happened to be at practice. It was interesting because I, for whatever reason on the blog in my recent trip, I've been spending some time looking at Colombian things, and there was a tweet stream where he was said he was working. He was working at the Revolution, and I think it was probably not meaning he had signed, but he was out, doing his thing.
Right.
But it was an interesting one for me anyway. I wouldn't mind seeing someone with that level of experience, because I've never heard Jay or Jay Miller, but doesn't jump off at me that they're fluent Spanish speakers, and we have 2.5 Colombians on the roster, so could be interesting.
Well, there you go. And so that might be fun. The other guy that was kind of hanging around, which is maybe a little bit presumptuous of us to say, considering he's got a sweet gig with ESPN, but Taylor Twellman was also seen hanging around the, I think it was the development teams, the youth teams, practice earlier this week.
So clearly he signed as well.
So clearly he's going to be the assistant, right? He's going
to
be.
I was just going to print with that.
Let's do that. Yep. All right, Taylor. We're looking forward to seeing you on the bench. and I know that's something that he had always talked about doing as well, but I think he's probably going to stick with ESPN for a little while.
We'll make it up as we go and see what happens.
There you go. But speaking of the Development Academy, they've got a lot of stuff going on over there. Well, first of all, the Revs put out a press release that they're sending a U-17 squad to South Africa,
yep.
which I thought was impressive.
Yeah, that's
a big tournament, apparently. And, to give these guys a chance to go over there and compete against teams from Qatar and Brazil, Uruguay, Ghana, Botswana, some of these, obviously, these African teams. And then there's 4 South African teams that haven't been named yet. Also, PSV Eindhoven's sending
it. Yeah, Eindhoven's there, and it looks like a pretty good mix.
Yeah, not too bad.
I mean, it's just a good sign that, we pick on the Revs for a lot of their stepping up to MLS 2.0, but at least if the Revs are taking the youth development seriously, that's a good sign.
Yeah, and it's a sign also, there's another development going on, which I'll touch on in a minute, but it is a sign that they're taking it very seriously. There's been a lot of criticism on the program from, I know a few parents of players that have gone through this, and they said that the grind with the high school and with, the school commitments and getting to Foxborough from wherever they are has always been a challenge. And for them to make the time, then they have weekend games, really, they go off for these little mini tournaments where they play twice on Saturday and twice on Sunday. Then they got to come back and get ready for school on Monday. And it's, takes up a lot of their time. So MLS has announced that they're stretching out the development program to go from a rather condensed schedule to a full 10-month schedule.
And there was a change in high school eligibility or focus as well,
I think, wasn't there? And along those lines, because they're asking for a 10-month commitment, they're also asking for the kids not to play for their high schools. that it's actually not an ask, it's a requirement. So the big changes going on in the Development Academy, I think overall for kids that, you know, it'll be a tough call. I know some other, I've listened to some other guys talk about this already, but there's a, you know, it's a tough call for kids that are already in a high school program and they've got a team there and they don't want to leave their friends behind and run off to join the Revs unless, you know, this becomes a real serious program and they're able to take that to the next level and enter professional ranks. I know a couple of kids personally have said, I want to be a professional soccer player.
Right.
You know, look at Diego Fagundes was one that, I mean, I didn't know Diego personally, but I know other kids that are kind of want to follow in his model, saying, yeah, this guy can do it. Why can't I?
And I think when you start to have trips of this nature or other development opportunities or more practices with the full team, it begins to take on some reason to step away from the high school game. You know, if it's just, hey, you're going to get watched, well, they probably figure they're going to get watched if they're in a good program in high school anyway. So this gives some more developmental opportunities.
You have to, you know, give the league a little credit here for taking the Development Academy in the right direction. You know, this is a more competitive way of doing it. It's a more probably easier on the kids all around. But also, you know, now they'll be able to also, you know, maybe go up against teams in Europe, go up against teams in Russia or wherever they are, you know.
Sure,
The Netherlands, in England. They've got the same development programs over there running the same schedules. I mean, obviously they're a lot more advanced over there than they are over here. But, you know, this opens up all those kinds of opportunities that, as this one tournament in South Africa is, you know, maybe just the first of many tournaments to come. They could feasibly now, you know, go have a grudge match against, you know, Liverpool's U17 team and, you know, their U18 team, whatever they've got over there. I just think it's a good for the development academies, and in the long run, it'll be good for American soccer. So,
yeah, I think overall, you know, more that, and let's be honest, you know, some of it is making sure these clubs feel that they're going to get deals and they're going to be able to keep their players, and there's, you know, advantages of signing your own youth team. But whatever the reason is, the more we could do to give the youth a professional setup to be more, you know, to be pushed in and to get that sense of what it's like, it's only going to help their development. So it's a good thing overall.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, we did have a couple of other questions on Twitter here that I think we should probably take a look at. We had our buddy, Mr. John Parker, a.k.a. Guitar Spoons on Twitter, was wondering how much of an impact you think Kenny Mensali is going to have on the team this year.
you know, it's a tough one.
Mr. Parker's being a little bit optimistic. He said he'd like to think that this is his year. But, you know, Kenny's that type of player who's been very streaky in the past, and he gets in a good run of form. And, you know, you look back to that New York game last year.
Game, yeah.
That was his game. That was his game. And you say, well, you know, why is he not doing this on a consistent basis? And you have to wonder if it was a bit, maybe it was the system that they were, or the lack of a system that they were playing in, and he was asked to, you know, maybe fill a different role, and he just kind of took the game over when he could. I also remember him scoring, I think, 2 goals against DC United the year before. So he has these kind of games which are really blips on the radar, because then he disappears for long stretches of time. But, you know, to say that he's going to have a huge impact on the team this year, when you've got guys like Cardenas coming in and Kellen Rowe, who's making a name for himself on the left-hand side, plus you've got Chris Tierney and Tyler Pollack.
And so you're kind of slotting him into a left midfield battle.
That's
where I'm wondering, is he more of a forward? And is that where he makes his mark on this team? And I don't know that he will, but I think, frankly, he's at his best when he's just driving the back line you know,
crazy
of an, yeah, exactly, driving them crazy on the other side. Whether it's because he's a physical player, he doesn't give up on anything. He'll frustrate the heck out of us with certain plays, but he's in there and to really push. Now the question is, we don't know who he'll play off of because we can't get our forward straight. It might be the new guy, Sarasen, whatever. I know I'm not pronouncing that pretty well yet. But so it's a little hard to even say because, A, we're not fully sure of the system we plug him into. B, he tends to be streaky, and we're not sure who'd be up front with him. So, because I think he'd like more likely make a mark up there than out on the left.
Yeah, I think it's unclear to even predict right now who's going to be starting up there. It could be that he ends up starting up there with Cardenas. You never know. It's or it could be he's up there with Diego Fagundes or maybe
Sene.
Yeah, if this guy comes over and he's healthy and he's ready to go, it could be him and Sene. But you know, it could also be Sene Niasse up there. You know, we don't know yet. And Ryan Kinney, who knows? There's a lot of room on this team right now for forward to really make his mark. Because I don't. It seems from the reports that I'm getting is that nobody's really stepping up and making and laying claim to that role yet. It'd be great if one of these guys just starts off the season and starts nailing in a bunch of goals right off the bat, or even if it's a target forward who's just holding up the ball for guys like Kellen Rowe and Benny Failhaber and whoever else is out on the field at the time. I think it's too early to kind of predict what kind of impact he's going to have, but it's safe to say if he's definitely a threat as a late game substitution. Other than that, I'm hesitant to say.
Yeah, my sense to Jay, I'm not sure exactly where I get this, but I'm guessing that he has sort of fond memories and hopes for Niasse and Mensali because they both seem to have had more impact on the teams when they were actually playing well, and that's the teams that Jay knows. And he probably is thinking he can get some more out of those guys. The question is, where can they be slotted in to get that turnaround, and can they make an impact on a continual basis? Because, you know, if we end the season talking about that one game against New York, I mean, that's great. That doesn't make a season.
No, it sure doesn't. And, you know, you've got guys like, similar to like Sene Niasse and Kenny Mansali and this guy, Sarasen. They're all super fast guys and that could be used as a threat again late in games or early in games to really kind of stretch out defense, keep them honest. And, you know, if you've got a four-man back line that's running up against, Sen or Senny, whatever his name is, Sire, and then, they get tired by the 70th minute and you sub off one guy and you put in Niasse or Mansali and they use their speed against these guys for the next 20 minutes, you know, you can't sub out your whole back line.
Right.
You know, that's where the Revs got burned on that a few times last year. They just didn't have the horses to compete with the, on the other side. So, you know, our defense is tired. You've got to put in some guys that can hold up the ball and run at the defense on the other team. We just didn't have that threat. But hopefully this year we get that.
No, and the other thing in the forwards is they sounded like they were looking for at least two guys. And now with Moreno being unlikely, let's just say, for the time being, you know, the question is, are they still in the market? Funny name that most fans probably want to stay away from, but an interesting one that looks like he's coming back to the league is Eddie Johnson. You know, there's something we need, you know, I don't know that he's the guy, but there's got to be a couple threats that we can throw in that have got some proof under them, and Mansali's the one. He's always come close to breaking through and never seems to get through, and I don't know exactly why that is. It would be interesting to see what they do to fill in that hole. I would think that they're still looking to fill.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be, like I said, these guys are going out of town this weekend. When they come back, we're going to have a real good idea as to who's going to be filling those holes for now. And I can't wait to see this, actually. Next Wednesday 8 o'clock for his first game against the Galaxy. And hopefully there'll be some live streaming or live tweeting or something on this game. I'm hoping that we can somehow see it. You would think that the LA Galaxy would be maybe in a position to stream the game live. So maybe
I haven't seen any information on how it'll be available yet.
Yeah, well, hopefully it will be available online. We'll let you know when we find out something. Let's see, who else? You know, there's some discussion on the TMRP hashtag. It's #TMRP on Twitter. What is a realistic start for this team record-wise? You know, if you're looking at the month of March. Let's take a look at the calendar. You've got first game against San Jose on March 10th. Then what? Who do you got?
You got KC out in KC.
Yeesh. All right, nope, so we'll say...
Yeah, that's right.
San Jose in San Jose. Revs have not done so hot out there against San Jose.
No, and you got to think KC with their stadium and all, they'll probably start strong.
The good news is that everybody's starting off rusty, right? I mean,
right.
There's, and you know, the Revs last year looked their best in the beginning part of the season because they were taking advantage of everybody else's rust.
Right.
Right. And not too bad. You know, they had a great start, you know, so to speak. Not next last year, they, you know, tied the Galaxy and on opening day and had a good game against Vancouver. And
now our challenge is we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, it's like most of all of our starting games are away. Until we have DC. So we've got two out of the first, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games or so. So that's going to make it hard to get started.
Yep.
I don't know that, you know, let's be honest, there's a supporter summit tomorrow, and a lot of listeners will probably be there. I don't know that Gillette offers that cauldron of fan support that makes it super hard to come here. Let's just leave it there. But it's always easier to be home, one would suspect, than, you know, they got to go to San Jose, then they go to the Lizstrunk Park, they got Home Depot in there, they got to go down to Dallas, and then they get home again. So that's a tough stretch.
Yep, it is. I well, what, Dallas? Oh, in April, right. So it's, yeah, so
let's before go. Before their second home game, yeah, that's the trip.
Right, so they've got, let's say San Jose, maybe get a draw. Sporting Kansas City, maybe get a draw. New York, Portland at home. You would hope that they would get a win there. Los Angeles at Los Angeles.
That's a tough game.
Yeah. It's going to be a tough schedule. Tough schedule. So, you know, Maddie, our buddy Matt Jolly, who writes for the Bent Musket, you know, saying that he'd be thrilled with 4 points in March. You know, is that four draws? Or is it, yeah. Or is it, you know, one win and one tie and two losses? And it's,
you know, and I think, you know, when we see or hear or at least read about what happens next week when they're actually playing some MLS teams, we might have a better sense of what's changed. I mean, we've definitely made some additions and some changes this year, but what I keep struggling with is how far has that bar been raised or has it been raised? And I don't know if we know yet.
Yeah, it's really hard to say.
There's been some good additions. Like Rowe seems like a good guy. He's a rookie. You know, it's hard to suspect. We got two new Colombians in. Don't really know anything about them, how they play. You know, we still have what feels like a hole in the forward, although addition this week is a big step in the right direction. So it's like, you know, it's hard to be a predictor at this point.
It really is. It's going to be tough. I think, you know, considering it's also, you got to, the new coaching staff, you know, how familiar were they with this team? I mean, the only guy that's really seen this team on a day-in, day-out basis is Remy Roy, their goalkeeper coach. And, you know, you give Jay Heaps some, you know, you give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because he was an analyst for the team for the, you know, the broadcast side. And presumably he did a lot of research and watched the games and kind of pre-game scouting, if you will. And I saw him at a couple of different practices last season, so you know he's there always watching. But you have to kind of think, you know, with the lack of with the massive change that they've had on that side of the field, you know, who's there to set the bar? A. And is that bar going to be set in a realistic spot? You know, it could be that Jay Heaps is coming in really low, like, and because he doesn't know any better. I don't know what.
I mean, he's bringing the right energy. The question is, can he get the team to be where his enthusiasm is? Does he have the coaching skills to get them to match his enthusiasm?
Right, and you know, the bar, you know, from Jay's playing days, the bar was also a little bit lower. You know, just because the league hadn't developed as much as it has over the last 3 or 4 years.
Well, the league bar was lower, and I think there was more of a system. And I think what people seem to be coming around to is maybe Steve Nichol and friends had kind of relied too much on what was an old system, and maybe had gotten, I don't want to say been gotten rusty, but something of that nature. There wasn't that same level of drive. And
right.
Now, that's changed, but we're starting over from a system, it sounds like. So what will be in place by the beginning of the season for, you know, 4 out of 5 away games or something, that's going to be really interesting to watch.
Right. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, we've been rambling on long enough. Let's wrap things up. First, let's give people a plug as to what they can read your piece on Colombian soccer here.
Yeah, sure. Over at Soccer Soapbox, the last few blogs have been talking a little bit about Colombia, and I, after coming back, was trying to respond to an innocent tweet about why are we getting so many players in the MLS from there. So, not getting a lot of people seem to be reading it. I've gotten some good Twitter comments and the like, but if someone's out there and wants to disagree and thinks I'm a nut, please go ahead and comment. I've heard worse.
Yeah, I think you're a nut, but
yeah, that's good though. That's why you have me on.
That's right, absolutely. Nice. Well, be sure to check out Bob on Twitter at Soccer Soapbox. The URL is soccersoapbox.com. I think you can even email him at soccersoapbox@gmail.
I can respond to Soccer Soapbox smoke signals, so I'm pretty much whatever you need me.
Soccer Soapbox Morse code.
Yeah, the bat signal, sure, whatever.
two Soccer Soapbox soup cans with a string attached.
I'm hanging on my front door.
There you go. All right, for this burgeoning disaster of a podcast, it's at TMR Podcast on Twitter. You can follow us there. Also, use the hashtag #TMRP. It helps us keep track of things on Twitter. You can send us emails to pod@themidnightride.us. We did get a couple of emails and some comments on Facebook page as well for the Midnight Ride podcast. So thank you guys for those emails. We'd love to hear the feedback. I'm glad you like the show. The last thing is make sure you subscribe on iTunes and leave comments there too. That'd be great. It's good to get that feedback, and the more people that subscribe just helps us get the show a little bit more of the publicity that we'd like it to have. So anything you guys can do to help on that would be great. And that's going to be it for this week. Hopefully we'll have some good news next week in terms of some good results from the FC Tucson Desert Diamond Cup. And we'll maybe know a little bit more at the end of this week as to who's sticking with the team and who isn't. So thanks again, Bob. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys next time on the Midnight Ride. Cheers. We gotta stay positive.